Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. I'm your co-host, Paul Dio. I have a very special guest, Jackie Insinger of Insinger Insights. She is a leadership and team consultant. Welcome, Jackie.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you, Paul.
So I like to start off our episodes with how did you get to where you are and what's a little bit of your origin story?
Oh, goodness. Given my age, there's a lot that got me to where I am. So what got me to where I am? So I guess, you know, to start, when I was really young, I was always, quite obsessed with how people act, react, and interact. And I think that kind of happened in two ways. One is it's a passion of mine to really understand people and dynamics just from an instinctual way. I think on the flip side of that, it was also a big coping mechanism for me. As a little girl, we all kind of take on our roles in our families and in our lives. And I was a bit of a pleaser. I was the one who didn't like conflict. I really liked things to be nice and easy. So I think it served me in two ways. One was really understanding people and what lit them up, what got a good reaction, how do you mend things when things were going wrong, right? Was something that was really fascinating to me. And it served me in the way of making things nicer and easier and taking some of the mess out of dynamics. And so I think it served a couple purposes in my life. You know, I studied psychology at Duke in undergrad. And then in graduate school, I went to Harvard and I designed a master's in interpersonal dynamics and psychology and really figured out there that there was real science behind this stuff. It wasn't just something I was interested in. And I just dove into the emerging field at the time. It was coming out right at the time that I was in graduate school of positive psychology, where it was the study of how people thrive, the study of strengths and how do you build what's strong, not just fix what's wrong. And that really resonated with that optimism and making things even better. That was kind of at my core. And from there, it really just took me on a journey of creating personality tests to figure out, you know, what makes people tick and what lights people up, and wrote about 100 of those for, a site called Emote at the time. Really trying to figure this out, and then started a business to work with people and relationships and leaders of how to light yourself up. And from there, how do you take that spark and really shine that light on others to bring out the best in them? And so that's kind of my journey of where I am now.
Interesting. Now, there's something that you said that I can kind of resonate to, which is you identified as a people pleaser. So as growing a business and as being an entrepreneur, how did you cope, or how did you adjust your personality? Like, what changes did you make that you recognize that you are a people pleaser and that you avoided conflict?
So meaning like, how did that work for me, or how did that work against me?
Given that information,
yeah.
Let's say you've realized this something that about yourself where maybe you're reading books, maybe you're seeing other people who are succeeding because they're approaching conflict. They're creating more conflict. They're creating more tension. How did you navigate knowing what you knew back then? And how did you adjust?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a blessing and a curse being a people pleaser. I think a lot of people feel that way. And what I've had to do to really adjust and, you know, being an entrepreneur and being out on your own that way and starting something is, I call it getting stretchy. It's a place in my life where I continuously have to get stretchy and kind of hit my head on my comfort zone and realize I need to be more direct. I need to channel this more direct side of myself and learn to own my voice, speak my mind, and do it faster. Sometimes instead of stewing over how will this impact, what will this work? You know, and I think it's a continual work in progress, but my new normal kind of keeps elevating of my comfort zone in there. So it's something I have to have an awareness of, you know, I tend to say yes, more than I probably should. And so that's something I step back, I pause, I put systems in place to recognize those things.
At what point in your life did you recognize that you saw patterns or you noticed patterns that were different from others, where you were able to observe the dynamics of a relationship or of a conversation more than other people?
That's a good question. What's funny is a memory just totally flashed into my mind that I hadn't thought about in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in first grade. I was talking to another little girl in my class. And I remember that I was wearing this white little cardigan and I said something that made her mad. I don't remember what it was, but it was not my intention. And she took her little, I don't know if you remember the lunch pizza, the cafeteria pizza, the square pizza.
Yeah, definitely.
She took her pizza and she threw it at me. And I remember feeling so upset. And I just started this new school. We had just moved from New York to Miami. And I was like so distraught. And I remember going to the bathroom and crying and thinking about how do I unwind this? Like, what do I say to this other girl in my first grade class to figure out how to mend this situation? Like, what does she need? What caused her to react this way? Wow. I remember sitting there in the bathroom trying to figure out, what do I do to make this better? What does she need from me so we can mend this? And ended up, we had this whole conversation mediated by our teacher to figure this out because I didn't know what I did that caused that reaction. But I remember thinking about what was it that caused that reaction, not just thinking, oh my gosh, she just ruined my sweater, or I am so embarrassed, or I want to leave. It was a thought process of what made that reaction happen. So that's interesting. I don't think I've ever thought about that before, but that's what popped in my head.
You know what I think of when I hear stories like that? I think of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, where he basically says there's the stimulus and the response. It's how you, the in-between that matters is mm-hmm. how you react between there, or how you think about the difference between stimulus and response. So now that you mentioned that story, I'll mention a story of mine as well, where every once in a while, in situation, I have a young daughter, she's 6 years old. Every once in a while, she acts in a way like as a normal daughter would, where she may have a tantrum, she may be in a bad mood, be impatient, just like any other kid. But there was one day where instead of trying to fix it or instead of trying to figure out what was going wrong so we could soothe it, we just gave it space. Mm-hmm. We gave it about a day and a half. And we asked, like, you know, what happened? What happened yesterday in the incident? Why were you so upset? She goes, Mom, I was really upset because I was anxious. There was someone new in our class that I wanted to be friends with, but that person hung out with other people. And so she was able to articulate in that situation the dynamics of this is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling this way because of that. And what's interesting about it is in the past, I'm thinking about growing up, is I would just say, okay, great. Like that person doesn't like me or whatever it was. But in that moment, it was like, wow, someone that young can have that detachment. And as long as you give them space to have those emotions and have that outside looking thing where you can separate the stimulus versus the response. That was one of my prouder parenting moments. Cause it's like, oh, I get it. You know, there was something underneath the layer of what was going on rather than, you know, whatever the dynamics was. So.
And what an incredible level of self-awareness for your six-year-old daughter to have, to be able to evaluate her feelings mm-hmm. based on that and tie it to her response. Mm-hmm.
Now, something that you mentioned also is fairly interesting is personality tests. So backstory, now this is your episode, but I'm going to put in a little bit of my background. So 2011, 2012, I went from a retail manager of a retail company. And I was fed up. I was actually working 6 days a week leading up to my wedding. I was working Sunday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. Hmm. And my wife goes up to me and says, hey, you got to find a different job. Like you're coming home miserable. You don't really know. You don't really have any energy. And part of it was I was in a young leadership position where I was the youngest person in the building. Trying to lead people who were tenured 20, 25 years, 30 years or whatnot. So what ended up happening is I interviewed couple of people in finance and understand and tried to figure out how hard it was to make it. So I interviewed my mom's financial advisor, and he basically said, if you can make it 5 years, it's really stressful within the first 5 years, but if you can make it past 5 years, it's one of the most fulfilling careers that you can ever have. And during that process, what happened was I interviewed with all the larger firms and they had me take a personality test. And what was interesting is in that personality test, they said I was too patient, not competitive enough, agreeable, like basically non-alpha, if you will. But, you know, I'm still alpha in some ways, but they took that personality, says you probably wouldn't make it in the environment that we would put you in, which looking back, they were right. But then I interviewed with another firm and they said, yes, they can validate that you probably wouldn't make it. That's because the goals, financial incentives, and the personality requires you to just kind of be authoritative. But in actuality, your personality tests is more of the farmer where you build long-term relationships. You'll never lose a client because you're so patient, because you're so agreeable and whatnot. So I had to kind of build my own system in place that matched to me as opposed to what systems and processes were in place that matched to others, much to the fact where I took that same personality test and I would interview my existing clients and I would have them take that personality test. So I created this log of different personality types to figure out, are they in the right job? Mm-hmm. Are they creating the right business? And it's eye-opening to see the dynamic if they're completely disengaged versus engaged just because of the roles and responsibilities that they put themselves in. So that was a large tangent to go off on your personality test thing, but
yeah. I love that. I love that you found the meaning from it and how to use it to your advantage. And, you know, it's interesting that I have a million thoughts coming up from what you just shared. I think that's it's such a great story, and it probably was deflating at first. And then you realize, wait, there's a gift in what I do have. And that differentiates me from all the rest of the people that you're fitting into these boxes. Right. And, and, you know, one of the things I always talk about with clients and the way I live by this rule is, you know, flipping from the golden rule, which is treat others how we wish to be treated, to flipping to the platinum rule, which is treat others how they wish to be treated. And, you know, realizing that and saying, you know, what is your gift? What is the thing that you bring instead of being so me-centric, right? Because who's to say that your needs and desires are the same as mine, right? Which is the golden rule. I assume by default that your tantrum as a six-year-old girl is the same reason why I would have a tantrum as a six-year-old girl. But meanwhile, what your daughter was going through was her unique experience and she needed time to solve it rather than maybe somebody else who might just, let's fix it. What's the solution, right? So everybody has their own needs and desires and ways of communicating and ways of being motivated, and yours with the longevity of the relationships and the loyalty that develops from the, you know, the connection, the deep connection, rather just the drive, right? And I think tapping into that and really leveraging those differences is where, you know, the cognitive diversity comes and the beauty comes and the multiplier effect of having different people together with different sparks and different skills. I mean, that's proven to make things so much more effective and profitable and fulfilling and all of those great things that we're trying to achieve in life.
Mm-hmm. And how did that part of your life doing the personality test, developing that, how did that affect you and what did you gain from it as you were in that stage?
You know, it was an interesting thing because the ones that I developed, so I was just graduated from my master's program. And there are a couple guys from Harvard Business School who, as one of the projects in their class, said, we're going to create this website that's, you know, mining for data on people and psychometrics so that we can, you know, build a platform of things that go viral and be able to sell products on it. And this is back in 99. So this was a very new idea. Yeah. So there were seven of us. They hired me to write all their content, to be in charge of personality tests. And I was like, sure, whatever that means, let's do it. And so it was actually quite a funny story. Like the first test I wrote was, what breed of dog are you? And it was you know, entertainment based, but I did all this research on personality matching with dog personalities and all the stuff. And you know, we're all kids in a basement in Cambridge. There were seven of us. And, you know, there's no social media. The only way to spread something is you take the link, you copy it into another email, right? And within weeks, it was the most clicked on link in the world.
Wow.
And we only found that out because all of a sudden we started getting calls from like New York Times and Howard Stern, who was big at the time. And they're like, there were a million clicks a week or something. It was something crazy. And so we're like, what's going on? People want to learn this stuff. So it was this way of realizing, you know, someone's like, wow, I'm like a pug. I want to share that about me with somebody else and learn what you are. And so with these little descriptions, and so what we're learning so quickly, you know, as a 24-year-old kid and learning that, wow, people want to know so much about themselves and be able to share this with somebody else. So it became this, you know, I just started writing and writing and writing and writing, and we ended up getting funded and moving to by a venture capital firm in San Francisco. And they moved us out there so they can watch us grow. And the company ended up getting purchased by monster.com. And it was just this evolution of how much people wanted to learn about themselves and shed new light on who they were and then share it with other people. And so, you know, through that evolution, it just gave me such validation and insight to how much people want to understand and share and say, this is something new about me, and I'd like you to see it. And then I'd like to learn something new about you. And it just seems like there's an endless way to do that. And so that just really just inspired me so much more to dive deeper with people and their relationships and themselves and their own awareness.
And what are you up to today as far as how that evolved? So currently you're in your leadership and consulting, just team building type of, how did the dominoes fall to where you are today?
So, well, from there, I started a private practice working with leaders and teams and really helping make more meaningful and effective relationships by using this platinum rule, by understanding each other's understanding. And how do we elevate the dynamic based on that? You know, remove some of the mess. Relationships are messy. All relationships have mess in them. So how do we minimize that? And how do we optimize each other's strengths and gifts to make easier, more effective, more fulfilling dynamics at home and in work, right? So really taking it into the workplace, started really focusing on leaders and how leaders and teams can work more effectively together and honor the differences we bring, leverage the strengths that we bring to be more effective teams, which impacts the bottom line. I'm a research junkie. So I started really diving more into neuroscience, studying neuroscience. How do you optimize your brain and behavior to do this? Really into getting deep into the field of positive psychology and all of the research around that, and forming systems and actionable practical strategies and really a playbook for leaders and teams on how do you implement these things with ease, you know, as simple as possible to continually take action to move into your potential and your team's potential. And there's so much great research out there on how to do it from a brain science perspective and putting that into practice specifically for leaders and teams. And so that's where I am now. And I love doing that. I just published a book last week on how to do that and put it into a leadership playbook on how to put this stuff into practice for real tangible outcomes to your business.
Yeah. And what's the title of the book?
Spark Brilliance.
Spark Brilliance. I'll put the link in the show notes. But as far as the playbook, right, as you mentioned, there's this diverse set of personalities out there.
Yeah.
And then there's also a playbook. How do you design a playbook which can adjust to the different types of personalities? Let's say someone is more research driven versus more shoot from the hip, action oriented. How do you mix that dynamic when you're trying to create a path for someone?
That's a great question. You know, the path is really about whoever you are. How do you have a better understanding of yourself? And how do you have a better understanding of the people you work with? right? And then using different concepts and tactics and kind of modules, whether it's around communication, whether it's around trust, which is a huge topic now, right? Trust and psychological safety. How do you maximize wins to create momentum and motivation? How do you insert levity and risk-taking with different people based on their personalities? How do you help people find their unique spark to leverage it and sit them in a place where they're doing what they love most? Because all of these things tie back to profitability and retention and, you know, engagement scores and all the things that we need and we need to focus on when people are leaving their jobs, right? If they don't have these things, if you don't trust your boss, if you don't feel like you can authentically be yourself, right? All of these things really matter. So how do you foster that no matter who you are? And so that's where it is first shining the light on yourself. So you understand you, and then what do you do with your team to put these things into place?
How would you, given shining the light on yourself, so for example, a leadership phase over the last 20, 30 years has changed, right? It was more so command and control, you do as I say, mm-hmm. versus now it's a lot more emotionally intelligent, empathy, yeah. leading with empathy. How do you change? How do you evolve in that when someone knows you to be kind of like, throw down the hammer and then this is do as I say, not as
yeah.
I do.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I have a story that came to mind. I have a client, let's call him Carlos, just, you know, he was the type of guy who was had like a Darth Vader leadership style. And, you know, he was a very fear-inspired leadership style, incredibly successful, built his own multi-billion-dollar company over 40 years on his own. And, you know, I came in and his leadership team brought me in to work with them to kind of start using my approach with all of this positive psychology and research on leadership. And he just sat back, arms crossed, you know, just rolling his eyes, looking at his watch, like, when is this fluffy stuff going to stop? And when I talked to him about, you know, asking, you know, what's the challenge here? What's the pushback? And he said, if I didn't act the way I did, I wouldn't be where I am. Mm. And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, his leadership style was validated because he was extraordinarily successful, right? So in his mind, yes, this works for me. So I said, well, let's just try a few things. Let's start with baby steps. Like at the beginning of a meeting, let's see if everybody else can share their ideas first before you share yours, just to see maybe there's something new that might come up. Let's talk about maybe share a win at the beginning of a meeting, a collective win before we just dive into the agenda, right? How about, right, you ask somebody about your weekend before you get right to the point of what you need accomplished that day. And just little things that happened. And what happened was to his credit, he started trying these little things and he started getting very good feedback. And so we'd sit down and reflect on the feedback. And over time, it wasn't overnight, but over time, the vibe changed and people started speaking up. They started sharing really good ideas. They started getting more innovative. They started laughing more, which, you know, breeds all these great hormones and oxytocin, which is bonding and authenticity and connection and, you know, dopamine hits from hearing the wins and all of these things started shifting. And he was like, all right, let's do this. I'm noticing the difference. So we put the system into place and retention changed and engagement scores went up and profitability went up and all of these things. And he ultimately bought in. And it wasn't that now he became a completely different person, but he kind of softened his hard edges a little bit of realizing, you know, people don't become complacent just because you tell them they did a great job, right? It doesn't make people not work harder because you tell them they did something well, right? And being able to share a personal story or build that connection doesn't mean that they're not going to take their work seriously, right? So sometimes there has to be these little parts of getting stretchy in your mindset shift as a leader to see, if I try this, what'll happen? And when you get that positive feedback loop, you start to see, wow, this doesn't make me a soft person or not a strong leader just because I show people their value, right?
Interesting. Given what you do, because you're working with people who lead teams, you're essentially inspiring others through few to many, essentially. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, where you take a team from, take a person from being Darth Vader to being a tremendous leader or highly productive, how do you feel about that? when you change around a company or change around the dynamics of their culture, how does that make you feel?
Oh my gosh. Even when you said that, I just felt like this flush of joy. What makes me feel so amazing about it is there's a whole science called emotional contagion. I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is such an
incredible thing.
So emotional contagion is the idea that we have mirror neurons in our brain. And in 33 milliseconds, our amygdala, which is part of our brain, will pick up on someone else's emotions and almost instantaneously take it on. And what happens is when you're a leader, not only do you impact the layer below you, but you also impact the layer below them that you might not even interact with by this emotional contagion. So when you show up and switch your attitude from like Darth Vader to Ted Lasso, say, which is extreme, but when you show up with that attitude of positivity into a meeting, your emotions then cascade to the people below you, which then cascades to the people below them. And when you have that positive outlook, there is so much that shifts that is proven and proven. And, you know, all these Harvard Business Review studies, like productivity goes up 31%. Your profitability can increase by 50%. Stress goes down by 23% just by shifting out of that negative space into a positive space. So the cascade effect that happens when one leader just decides to pause before they walk into the room and say, I'm going to start with something positive. I'm going to start by showing an authentic connection. I'm going to start today by sharing a win. Just those little shifts cascade out and change so many people's day that when I, the feeling that I have when that one person gets it, that flash of light where they're like, that matters. And I feel the difference. How many other people that impacts is just like, that's a movement in there that just makes, that just lights me up.
Now, given that movement and the things that occur during that, how do you think about legacy, your own legacy, and how you want to be remembered?
Exactly that. Just feeling that contagion of positivity and that you can so easily shift someone else's day and have no idea just by the choice you make in how you show up in a moment, right? And the more that you can say, it begins with me, right? And that's what I always tell leaders. It begins with you, right? How you choose to show up in that meeting, how you choose to show up in that moment, how you choose to show up and greet your child when they walk in the door, it begins with you. And so the more conferences or the more talks, and I have people in a room and I'm like, if you can take one message away and realize it begins with you and change one thing in your day, every day, like that's the legacy that I would be so grateful to leave.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm sure we could talk for hours between personality tests and parenting and whatnot. But Jackie, where can we find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook. It's Jackie@insingerinsights.com is my email. Spark Brilliance is my book, which is, you know, anywhere you can buy books and on Amazon. And I just would love to hear from anybody and hear feedback. I just love hearing what people think about it.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.